We've already spent 2 days on Pasakum. I don't want to spend that much more on Pasakum, so we're going to try to wrap it up today. We're not going to get through everything, but we'll get through whatever we can. Tomorrow, Bez Hashem, Rav Yonasan Sacks is giving shir. Sunday is visiting day. Monday, Rav Eliakim Konigsberg is giving shir. I'll probably do Tzvilas Kalim, which we're definitely not going to get to this summer, it looks like. Tuesday, I hope to start Bishul Akum. So we have our work cut out for us. So the first thing I want to talk about as far as Pasakum, we already went through much of the background information, the sugya in the Gemara. There is another little piece of Gemara that strangely appears on Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis about Pasakum that we didn't see, but most of you probably saw how the Shulchan Aruch quotes that little piece of Gemara Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis where it has all of the kulas. Like what sort of leniencies you can, what a Jew needs to do in order to take bread that is otherwise Pasakum and make it Pas Yisrael. It is very strange that that appears in Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis. Lamed Ches Amud Beis we're going to see is the location of the sugya of Bishul Akum. The fact that there are halachas of Pasakum that just pop up on Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis is indicative of some sort of kesher between Bishul Akum and Pasakum beyond the fact that they both end with the word Akum, that there may be some other connection between Bishul Akum and Pasakum. And, you know, like for example, there are 39 malachas on Shabbos. One of those malachas is Afia, right? So we know that malacha most frequently not as Afia, but as Bishul. What were they really doing in the Mishkan? They were baking bread. Okay, the Bishul of the Sadmanim as well. But the normally Afia and Bishul are the same thing. In Halakha, we would view them as the same thing. But when it comes to Machal Yakum, it seems that that there are two separate gzeros. The question is Afia, is Pasakum Bishul plus? Is Bishul, you know, Afia plus? Like how exactly, or are they just two totally separate issues? So maybe we'll have an opportunity to get into that. But first I want to go through the four snifim lahakel that you have with factory-made bread. Because, you know, most often, no one's going to a non-Jewish bakery to buy bread. But what you might do is you'll see bread on a supermarket shelf, and the bread is made by a large company, a large factory that makes bread. And that would be, and your question is whether that would be a violation of Pasakum. So important to remember what the Shulchan Aruch said in Sif Beis as background over here. Shulchan Aruch and Sif Beis said, Yesh mekomos shemekilin v'davar, v'lokchim pas min nachtom ovidchavim b'makom shen shem nachtom Yisrael, neshi shazachak. That the Shulchan Aruch records the kula, that if there is no Jewish baker around, you're allowed to buy from a non-Jewish baker. But very, very clear, Shulchan Aruch says, if there is a Jewish baker around, you need to go to the Jewish baker. Comes along the Ramah, some say even Pas Yisrael Matzu, you're allowed to buy from a non-Jewish baker. That's as far as bakers are concerned. So let's say you are not Mekil like the Ramah, you're Machmir like the Mechaber, and you're only willing to buy Pas of a Palter Akum of a non-Jewish baker when there is no Jewish baker around. Would the same apply to buying factory-made bread, not bakery bread? Meaning, we've distinguished between pas balabatim and pas palter. What's pas balabatim? Yeah, regular pas akum. You got your non-Jewish neighbor is baking, and you say, oh, it smells delicious, can I have some? So there's an actual personal relationship. What's pas palter? What makes a pas palter? Because isn't every baker also a person? Right? What makes a pas palter?
It's commercial.
He's doing it for business. He's not doing it because, oh, you have to taste my cookies. They're so delicious. No, he's doing it for business. Is there a third category? Right? Is there something that's even more impersonal than pas palter, which we just say, you know what, that's totally mutl. And if there is a third category, right, it would be a major factor. So that's first issue over here. What about, you know, you go to the supermarket and you see, you know, a package of bread in those long plastic bags, right? You have no idea who baked that bread. It's this massive company. So is there room to be makel? There are four snifim lahakel that we find. First, Rav Moshe is quoted. The OU puts out a journal called Mesora. I think it comes out every year. So in the very first edition of Mesora, they quote a tshuva from Rav Moshe that I don't think is an Igros Moshe, that there is this third category, that the whole series, Mishum Chaslos, that's only when at least you know who it is that's baking for you. But if you don't even have any way of finding out who the guy is that baked your, like you go to the supermarket, you buy the bread, you have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, not a kale, just a jelly sandwich, and you, no nuts, not frisole, and you eat the bread, and then you say, wow, this bread was fantastic. I'm going to call up, you know, the phone number that's printed on the bag, and I'm going to find out who baked this bread, because I want more of this, right? I want to marry his daughter. I want to be able to, right? So you call up the company and say, I need to know who baked, I'll read you the serial number. I want to know who baked the bread. They're not going to be able to help you. They're not going to tell you which guy or woman or whatever wearing a hairnet somewhere in a factory in some massive bakery in, you know, in the Midwest baked your bread. So it's so impersonal. You know, a baker, it's at least your local baker. Yeah, he's doing it for a profession. At least you know who it is. That's a svara that Rav Moshe suggested. Oh, I wanted to do the second. Okay, I forgot about the Mishnah Sabbai Seder Yaakov. Okay, we'll go back to the Mishnah Sabbai Seder Yaakov after. Let me just quickly run through this. That's a svara that Rav Moshe suggested. Rav Vosner says that he has a tradition from the Chazon Ish that no such svara exists. Now, if you're going to be makel based on that svara, so we'll have to keep that svara in the back of our minds because it shouldn't only apply to pas. It should apply to anything that's Mishum Chasnas, including Bishl. Huge kula. That would be a huge kula in industrial kashrus. That we know that any kosher certified company would be allowed to have Bishl Akum in all their plants because it's a giant plant. It's not a personal thing. Wild, wild kula. But that is, so the Shevet Levi says he has a tradition from Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish didn't want to hear of it. In fact, he doesn't even quote by name. He says, I saw that someone writes that you could pass him to be makel on this. Doesn't even quote that it was Ramesha. Certainly doesn't quote that it was the OU. B'shem Ramesha. Right? But absolutely not. He says Chazon Ish was not into this at all. A second potential kula, is based on what the Gemara quotes on Lamed Chesed and Beis. The Gemara that we did not see, but you know, we'll see when we get to Bishul. The Gemara Lamed Chesed and Beis tells us how much a Jew has to be involved in the baking process in order for it not to be a violation of Pas Akum, which is very interesting because most of the discussion about this is going to come up when we discuss Bishul Akum, meaning how much do you have to do? Is it enough to is it enough to just throw a little wood into the fire? Is it enough to just light the pilot light? You know, something very small. Is that considered enough to of participation by the Jew? So in Si'if Tes, the Shulchan Aruch writes, and this is straight from the Gemara, the discussion of the Gemara is only by Pas Akum. It's not by Bishul Akum. And that's why both Svardim and Ashkenazim rely on these leniencies, because it's Beferish in the Gemara. The question between Svardim and Ashkenazim that we're going to see here is whether these leniencies also apply to Bishul Akum. But it's clear that it applies to Pas Akum. Shulchan Aruch writes in Kufi Beis of Tes, Hidlik Ovid Chav Matan Ravavah B'Yisrael. If the guy lit the oven and the Jew baked the bread, oh, Shehidlik Yisrael Va'avah B'Chavim, or reverse, right? The Jew lit the oven, the guy put the bread in the oven. Oh, Shehidlik Ovid Chav Va'avah B'Chavim, or even if the guy lit the oven, the guy baked the bread, what did the Jew do? B'Yisrael V'Nira Eishmat. The Jew comes and, like, you know, pushes the fire around a little bit. He stokes the coals a little bit. So that's all you need. Hareza Mutter, it's Mutter. And then the Shulchan Aruch adds, "Va'afilu lo zarak ela eitz echod l'toch hatanur." Even if he just threw one little piece of wood, he takes a toothpick and he throws it into the oven. That's good enough. Hitir kol ha'pas shebo she'ino davar elios heker shapas shelen asura. That's totally mutter. Now, why? Very important. Important line. Shulchan Aruch says, "Why? Because eina davar ela lios heker shapas shelen asura." What does that mean? If you go to an industrial size oven, and you take a toothpick, and you chuck it in the oven. And, you know, you're eating lunch afterwards with this all this delicious bread, and you say, you should know something about this bread. I baked it. Right? This was all me. What's everyone going to say?
No.
You did nothing. Nothing. Mouse, nothing. Had you not come along, nothing would have changed. Like, there would have been, you know, nothing at all would have been different. Right? Zero. Mamish zero. Right? Like sometimes, you know, we're having a meal and I'll announce to all of our company that this chicken is all me because my wife couldn't open the jar. And, you know, I had to open the jar of the duck sauce that, you know, went to marinate this chicken. All me. No, mamish zero. It could have had, you know, anyone could have done it. Right? Zero. There's even less than that. You throw a toothpick in. So the Shulchan Aruch says, so why does it matter? Why do we make up on that? Shulchan Aruch says, because it's not about you actually contributing to the cooking process. It's about a heker. That, remember we discussed this very yesterday? Right? That you just at least have to go through the mental activity of saying, wait, Pasakum is Asr, do I have some sort of head? Right? Just by going through that exercise, that mental exercise, that's all you need to do. That's what the Shulchan Aruch writes. Says the Ramah, v'im nafach be'esh havi kechitui. You don't even have to touch the fire. Even if you just fan the flame a little bit, that's good enough. Even just fanning the flame. That Ramah is based on the Maril, quotes a raya from a Gemara. The Gemara in Baba Kama, Daf Yizayin on the base, Daf Yud Ches on the base, Baba Kama. What does it got to do with Baba Kama? What did the Ramah talk about? Fanning the flame. What does it got to do with Baba Kama? Second verse of Baba Kama?
It's like you damaged
it. The Gemara talks about Isha Mishum Chitza, Isha Mishum Emono, Liba V'Libsa HaRuach. You have a fire that goes and damages. Let's say I didn't make the fire, I just fanned the fire. I just, right? So based on the Gemara and Baba Kama, the Maril has it talks about it talks about animals also, the Behema, Mono Amazik. So it's one of the examples of Mamono Amazik, of your animal doing damage, is Tsroros. What's Tsroros? The animal's walking and something shoots out. So the Gemara says that, let's say the animal flaps it's a chicken or something, it flaps its wings, it makes a wind by flapping its wings, and the wind damages. So that's considered Mazik Bugufa. That's considered as if you damage directly. Says the Maril, you hear the Tsushta? If a chicken flapping its wing and making air, that's considered that it's damaging directly. It's the same as the chicken going over to the person and punching in the face with his wing, right? That's direct. It's gufo. So then, no, it follows.
You fan the fire.
Yeah, you fan the fire. It's you. That's the Rama. Pashtus, that he's proving from this Gemara that that's considered gufo, and that's why lahalacha many assume that if a Jew sets a timer to turn an oven on but doesn't actually turn the oven on, he just sets a timer that it's going to turn on, maybe that's not Pas Yisrael, because you didn't, it's not the wind is supposed to be gufo. But according to the Mechaber L'chora, it's not about whether it's gufo or not. This is your action, not your action. What's it really about, according to the Mechaber? Yeah, did you go through the mental exercise of figuring out, do I or do I not have a head to? L'chora, according to the Mechaber, it would be a significant kula in that situation. Yeah.
So if someone else is eating the bread that wasn't involved in it, they didn't do any mental exercise, it was all done by the guy, by the ones you involved.
No, so that the nature of the gezeira is that once it's Pas Yisrael, it's Pas Yisrael, which I guess we'll get back to when we go back to the Rashba, when we go back to the Mishmeres Habayis. So a second kula is that a Jew only needs to do very, very little. So little that it could be that even if he just even if he just throws in a toothpick would be enough. So maybe in industrial baking, just the fact that there's a mashkiach there, he once did something and the ovens never went down for long enough that that the effect of the Jews doing something, throwing something in, or turning the oven on, you know, at some point a week ago, maybe that's enough. Maybe that's enough. That's a second sniff lahakel when it comes to industrial baking. A third sniff lahakel is that when it comes to industrial baking, it could be that machines are doing everything. That you're not actually, no one is actually taking bread and putting it into the oven. They dump a bunch of flour into this side of the machine, a bunch of water into that side of the machine. Someone pushes a button, the flour and the water start to mix. They start going down a thing. They get into this big mixing bowl that goes all by itself. And then it cuts it up into pieces of dough that are smaller, and then it shapes the dough, like all by machine. One could argue that that's not pas akum. Pas Yisrael, no, but not pas akum. Meaning it's pas nobody. It's pas of a machine. This would be a very similar discussion to the issue of machine matzah, but in the reverse, right? If you're going to be machmir, that you won't use machine matzah because you call that that's not, you consider that it's not that a Jew made it because it just happened, so you're going to be makil when it comes to a guy pushing a button somewhere and bread coming out, right? That lechara would turn. Now, it could be that they have nothing to do with each other, because when it comes to machine, when it comes to matzah for Pesach, you need lishma. You don't just need a maizi; you need lishma. That's the it's a different geder, as opposed to by the bread. It could be that you need kocho. So those could be different gedarim. Those could be different. Different halachos, so it's not necessarily they don't necessarily fit together. They're not necessarily perfect fit with each other. But that's at least a third potential kula, a fourth potential kula for industrial bread is that there is a major hetter we're going to get to, and we're going to spend some time on when we discuss bishlakum, called eino olah al shulchan melach. One of the hetterim that are explicit in the Gemara is that if a guy cooks something that would not be fit for a king's table, then it's no problem with bishul akum. Like what? What's eino olah al shulchan melach?
Entments.
Okay, that's baked, right? So we have to figure out whether it applies to pas. But on cooked foods, that would never be served on a king's table. This was the minhag in Europe that people used to eat canned sardines. The canned sardines were cooked by guyim. Why in the world would people eating canned sardines cooked by guys? It's a violation of bishlakum. Because if you were to eat by the Queen of England or you were to go to the White House for a state dinner, and they come out with cans of sardines and a can opener, and they plop sardines down on your plate, something is wrong. That wouldn't happen. That just would never happen. It would never be ola al shulchan melach. So the question is, does the same apply to pots? Meaning, if you were to go to the to Queen of England, or you were to go to, you go to Buckingham Palace, you go to the White House, and you're there invited for this fancy dinner, and they take out, like this long plastic bag where, pre-sliced bread, and they, pluck down a few pieces of it in the bread basket, that would never happen. It would never happen. They have a baker on staff, and they're baking fresh bread. They're not baking bread with preservatives in it so that it can sit for 2 weeks on a supermarket shelf. Right? It's an entirely different quality. It's an entirely different level. So it made that may be an additional kula. It's a machlokas achronim, which we don't have time to get very into right now, but it's a machlokas achronim whether olah al shulchan melachim is a heter by pas or only by bishul. And part of it is about how connected pas akum and bishul akum really are. Right? So olah al shulchan melachim is definitely a heter by bishul. And also part of the issue is, and this we can discuss in much greater length when we get to Bishul, how do you define olah al shulchan melach? Let's say you have a president of the United States who is known to eat Big Macs all day and all night. Like, his favorite thing to eat is a McDonald's 99-cent Big Mac. Right? That's what he eats. Now, when he has a state dinner and he invites foreign dignitaries, they do not serve Big Macs. They don't take out a greasy bag with a yellow M on it and serve Big Macs. What do they do? They have the chef in the White House make something really, really nice. How do you define olah al shulchan melach? Is olah al shulchan melach something that a king would eat in his personal life? Or is it something that would be served at a state dinner? So it could be that a king would have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on, you know, classic bread that you could buy in the supermarket, but it would never be served at a state dinner. Right? That would be enough. That would be enough kumin.
Is it possible that
also
in the specific dish of the kumin?
In the specific
way it's made versus
kumin? Not pasha. No, all of this is machlokes. Not pasha. Not pasha at all. Yeah, and old Nechol Kmo Shul Chai also, right? Not Pashut at all. We're not going to go too deeply into it now because that's really the Bishul Akum Sugya. I think the standard Pesach is that by Pasakum that Olo Shul Kmo Akum is a Hetcher that does not apply to Pasakum. But these are the Snifim Lahakil when it comes to major factory type bread. But that's not what I really wanted to start with today. What I really wanted to start with, I just forgot, is the Mishmeres Sabayis. I thought it was a very fascinating kula. Not kula, very fascinating comment that the Mishmeres Sabayis had. So who wrote the Mishmeres Sabayis?
Rashba.
How do you know? Because it says in the sheet, Mishmeres Sabayis, Leharashba. What is the Mishmeres Sabayis? Anyone ever hear the Mishmeres Sabayis? So the Rashba's real work is the Torah Sabayis. Right? But then the Ra'ah wrote a critique of the Torah Sabayis called the Bedek Habayis. So the Rashba had to defend his bias. So how does it, right? The Bedek Habayis is searching out, you know, all the flaws in the bias. But the Rashba had to defend his bias. So what did he do? He wrote a Mishmeres Habayis, a protection of his bias. Okay, so in the Mishmeres Habayis, the Rashba is, since we're number 21, very, very good eye to see inside. The Rashba writes as follows. We already saw that there are two major kulas for Pasakum, for Paspalter at least, for Paspalter, according to the Rashba. And the two kulas are based on the Gemara, straight from the Gemara. One, if there's no Pas Yisrael available, then we're allowed to have Paspalter Shalakum. And two, if you're Basada, you're not in the city, you're out in the field somewhere. Either one of those is a good enough kula. So the Rashba deals with a very fundamental issue. When does that kula take effect? Is that a reversible kula or an irreversible kula? Let's say, for example, there is no Pas Yisrael available. There's no Palter Yisrael in my town. I live in South Dakota. The only Palter is a Palter of Idchad. Right? So it says in Shulchan Aruch, I'm allowed to rely on the Rashba, right? So I'm going to go and I'm going to buy, I load up on, I go to Costco and I buy these gigantic things of bread, and I put it in the freezer, and as needed, I start defrosting and using as needed, right? And like a week after, or a day after I bought all this bread, I'm reading the South Dakota Jewish Times or something, and the local Chabad guy decided he's starting a bakery out of his Chabad house. So now I have a Jewish bakery here in South Dakota. What do I do with all that bread in my freezer? Did it now become not kosher? Because if there's a Paltry Yisrael available, you're not allowed to have it according to the Shulchan Aruch. So that's what the Rashba deals with, according to the Rashba, which is Shulchan Aruch. That's what the Rashba deals with. So if you look at Source number 21, Kol Shalo Hayasham Paltry Yisrael B'Shas Afiyaso Mutter. Anytime there was no Palti Yisrael when the bread was baked, it's mutter. Sounds like he's looking at time of baking, right? But then he says, V'im lokach mimenu Yisrael, if the Jew bought the bread, v'achar kach higia sham Palti Yisrael, and then the Chabad house started baking their own bread, lo yotza harishon me'atero, the initial bread remains mutter. Because at the time that the Jew bought the bread, there was no Palter Yisrael, so the bread remains motzi. Upas of the glul eno kinevela, shenemar alav b'makom sakana mutter, balav al shulchanu basar shchuta asa b'nevela. Ooh, what about the following case? You have someone, Rachman al son, is deathly ill, pikuach nefesh, deathly ill, and they need to eat now. They need to eat meat now. That's the only thing that's going to keep them going. The only meat available is nevela, right? So what do? You get nevela meat because they have to live. And right in the middle of the meal, perfectly kosher, oh you glot meat comes to the table. Do you say, one second, let me just finish this hamburger and then I'll go for that? No, right in the middle of the meal, you put down the nevela hamburger and you start eating the kosher food. It doesn't, you don't say, oh, once it became mutter, it's mutter. So why by pas akum should it be any different? It became mutter when I bought it. Now a Jew opened up a bakery. Don't worry, it's still mutter. Because once it became mutter, it stays mutter. So the Rashba himself is dealing with this issue. Aval pas, she'enu neser el machmas hatakana. Because pas was only asr mishum takana. So when there is no palter, Israel, it was mutter. So and we go back to what its d'oraisa status was, and once we take away the drabanan and we go back to the d'oraisa status, which is what kosher bread baked by a goy mid'oraisa mutter. So that's it. It stays mutter forever, because what, you're gonna go back and forth. It's gonna be mutter then asr then mutter. That's going to look kichucha v'yitluva. It's going to look like a joke. The whole religion looks like a joke. Now, in the middle of the, oh, it was kosher a minute ago, but now it's not kosher anymore. Why? What happened? Nothing changed. Because on Central Avenue, a Jew opened up a store. Not Central Avenue, Cedars. That was a long time ago, but in South Dakota, a Jew opened up a store. So that's it. So now it becomes, it looks like a joke. So we just go back to the original. That's what the Rashba writes. The Seder Yaakov, which is a contemporary achron on Maseches Avodah Zarah. I have it over there, those two big red svarim that are almost up against the bookshelf. Two big fat volumes on Maseches Avodah Zarah. He suggests that, he tries to explain the Rashba. And he says, you know, by Pikuach Nefesh, the Isser never went away. You know, when someone is deathly ill and you allow them to eat nevela, it's still nevela. The issur is still there. The issur didn't go anywhere. And even if you hold hutra, the notion of hutra that it's heter gamur, he says that just means, what does he say? Lo mi bayi dechuyu al afilu hutra hainu shepikuach nefesh docha oso mikol v'kol. That just means that in a situation of pikuach nefesh, you don't have to start thinking about, you know, can I get this, can I get that? Just eat whatever it takes to keep you alive. Aval sibas he'isr yesh, but it's still nevela. And nevela is still something that's usr. Aval b'pas, shegazra lek shuhutra gzeres ha'pas, k'shein palta Yisrael, ein apshat shezedocha gzera omatira. It's not that you're being docha the gzera when there's no Jew. It's just there is no gzera when there's no Jew available. Hemidu ali karo. We go back to the dindoraisa. That's the way he phrases it. I didn't love the way he phrases it. I would have phrased it a little differently. I think it fits much better into the Rashba. The way to view it, I think, the way I would have phrased it is like this. When Chazal made a gzera, that something is awesome. Did they make a gzera that it becomes a chefza of ma'achalos asuros? Or did they make a gzera on the gavra that you don't need it in this circumstance? But it's not a chefza shal ma'achalos asuros. Let me explain. When you have nevela, right? Is that just the din in the gavra, or is this piece of meat a chefza shal isur? Definitely chefza shal isur. And that didn't change. It was always a chefza shal isur. It's just that b'makom pikuach nefesh, you're allowed to violate the chefza shalisur. You have a mitzvah to violate, but it's still a chefza shalisur. How do I know it's a chefza shalisur? Anybody else in the world who wants to eat it is violating the daraisa. But it's clearly a chefza shalisur. When it comes to pas akum, I think what the Rashba is saying is that they never made it a chefza shalisur. They never turned it into a chefza of machalos asuros. They never made this bread a chefza of machalos asuros. What did they say? Because of chasnus, we don't want you eating it. And when there's no Jewish bakery in town, then you can't eat it. All of it is din in the gavra, which in general is the way Yisurim Drabanan work. That's famous in Sivis and Reish Lama Dali, about all Yisurim Drabanan being Yisurim Gavra, all Yisurim Darais being Yisurim Chatz. Even if you don't buy the Sivis, you're not into that old chilik that he has. But at the very least over here, it seems that that's what the Rashba is saying. And therefore, since the Chefza never had the status of a Chefza Shalisser, there's nothing to really be matir afterwards. The let me give an example of this. There is a sugya in Pesachim and Daf Lamed Vav and Zvachim and Daf Tzadi Hei that you're not allowed to have milchik bread. You're familiar with this halacha? You're not allowed to have milchik bread, even if it's perfectly kosher. Why? Because bread was eaten typically with meat at all meals, so you're not allowed to have milchik bread. And the Gemara has a couple of kulas. The Gemara says, oh, but if it's ke'ein tura, if the bread is made ke'ein tura, then it's mutter. What does it mean, ke'ein tura? So it's machlokas rishonim. Rashi says ke'ein tura means that the bread is made in small portions. Ke'ein tura means ke'ein, ka'ayin shel, like the eye, tura of a shor, like the eye of an ox. Your bread is like the eye of an ox. In what way is my bread like the eye of an ox? Well, the eye of an ox is about this big, your bread's about this big. That's what it means. If you make milk and bread in very tiny portions, an English muffin, tiny portion, that's it. That's your milk and bread. That's mutter. Because you're not going to forget in the amount of time that it takes to eat such a small amount of bread and put pastrami on it. But if you're making a large amount of bread, then it's going to be also. That's Shitas Rashi. The Rambam, Ma'achol Sesuris Paraktes al Chavez, says that no, Ke'ein Tura means it's shaped funny. It's made in some sort of tzura that's unusual. It doesn't look like a regular loaf of bread. It looks like a croissant. What's that? Well, it's just puffy and different. You know, it looks like a Danish. It doesn't look like a regular piece of bread. By the way, both of those kulas are paskin lahalacha, and the OU relied on both of them for years with Thomas's English muffins. Thomas's English muffins are OUD. How could they have OUD English muffins? They're bread, they're tiny portions, and they're shaped differently than regular bread. They're muffins. They're breakfast muffins, they're not bread. Those were two of the kulas. They had other kulas as well, shvatim b'shish and whatever. But the halach is like both. The halach is like both. Now, what about the following? Let's say I have a big loaf of dairy bread, and I don't want it to be usher. I want to be able to use it. So what do? I cut it up into small portions. Right? I cut it up into small portions. Now can I use it? So the Chavos Das, quoted by the Pesachei Teshuva in Siman Tzadi Zayin, says that once it's baked in an usher way, reshaping it doesn't help. It's usher. The Chachma Sa'adan and the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan Simit Sadi Zayin Sivches, the Chachma Sa'adan and Klal Nun Osei, say that no, you cut it up into small pieces and you give it out to different people, different families, so everyone gets it as small bread. Even though you baked it big, that's perfectly fine. It becomes mutter. What are they arguing about? So if Salvation explained what they're arguing about is, conceptually, oh, let me give you I'll make it a little more geschmack. There's a further machlokas. In general, we know there's something called bittel, right? In order to be mevatel milk, let's say in chicken soup, how much chicken soup do you need klapei the milk? 60 to 1, right? You need shisha, right? So, are you allowed to pour just a teeny drop of pig fat into your chicken soup? Teeny drop of milk? No, what's that called? Ein mevatel in issa l'chachila. You're not allowed to purposely be mevatel in issa. You're not allowed to do that on purpose. If it happens, if it falls in, it would be mutter. Gilyon Marsha, of Shlomo Eger, not the Marsha. Gilyon Marsha, the side of the Shulchan Aruch, Siman Tzadi Zayin, says just like you're not allowed to pour a little bit of milk into your chicken soup, you know what else you're not allowed to do on purpose? Pour a little milk into, tiny drop of milk, into your dough. To make milk, you know, not even milk, bread, it's going to be batel. Tiny drop of milk into your dough. Not allowed to do it. The Nachlas Tzvi on the side of Yerodea. Who's the Nachlas Tzvi? Nachlas Tzvi is the author of Pesachei Teshuva on the bottom of Yerodea. So when he has more to say, Pesachei Teshuva is just a collection of what other people say. He calls you every Chassam Sefer, and the Yudin, and Kiveger, and Teshuva Me'ava, and what other people say. But when he has his own comments, he, you know, tries to separate it out. So he wrote something called Nachlas Tzvi. He says, no. Pouring milk into chicken soup, that's bittul chachil. That you're not allowed to do. Because if you're if you were to do enough of it, it would make it non-kosher, right? If you were to pour too much, it would make it non-kosher. So that you're not allowed to do. But pouring a little milk into dough, that's perfectly fine. Because it's not really iser. Meaning, let's say you were to then take that dough and shape it weirdly, it would be mutter. You take that dough and you cut it into tiny portions, it would be mutter. So that would be totally fine. So we have two machlokas over here, right? One machlokas about pouring tiny amounts of milk into dough. That was the second machlokas we did. The first machlokas that we did was what? If you already have a milk bread, can you chop it up? Right? Two machlokas. Comes along Rav Soloveitchik, and Rav Soloveitchik suggested it's the same machlokas. It's a machlokas in what the Geder Adin is. And the Chavos Das is exactly the same as the Gilyon Marashad, namely that the Isser to make milchik bread is an Isser of Chazal declared milchik bread to be a Cheftza of Machlokas Asuras. Just like clearly when Chazal asked, and it's only Chazal that asked, chicken and milk, chicken soup and milk is only an Isser Drabanan, but it's a Cheftza Shal Isser Midrabanan. It's a Cheftza of Machlokas Asuras. Milch bread is a chefta machal sasuras. And therefore, if it's mamash a chefta machal, ein mevatlin the silachat chila is going to apply. And once it became asir, it remains asir. Because it's a chefta machal sasuras. Chachmas Adam and the Nachas Tzvi, right? On the other hand, the Aruch HaShulchan, say that no, it's a din in the gavra. You have to save yourself from violating the isra of basa b'chalav. So you have to set up certain harchakos to avoid violating basa b'chalav. So you can make it mutter even after it was baked. As long as when you decide to eat it, you're going to eat it in a mutter way. It's not a mevatlan isra chachila. There's no isser. There's no din of cheftza shel isser. It's purely in the gavra. Let's say you buy dairy bread and you use it in your kosher utensils, your kosher milchig utensils. Does it become aser? Will it aser your utensils? What does it depend on? If it's a cheft of macholos asuros, so it should aser your utensils also. But it's just in the gavra, there's nothing not kosher about it. The chorus should not aser your utensils at all. Right, Pasha says it would not ask you utensils because the gezeira was not to eat milchik bread. But if you hold that they gave it a status of macholos asuros, then lechorit should ask you utensils as well. So I believe you could say a similar idea, but it's not exactly the same. A similar idea with this rashba. Now, when you're dealing with something that's mamash chefta shalisser nevela, so I don't care, you know. It's pikuach nefesh. You have to notice as soon as pikuach nefesh goes away, it's still a chefta shel isser of nevela. But when you're dealing with the din and the gavra, right, that it's not a chefta of machal asuros pasaku. It's a din that you have to go through at the point of purchase. You have to go through a mental exercise. You need this hecker at the point of purchase. You have to go through this mental exercise. Is this okay? So good. So you were mekayim the din and the gavra of going through that mental exercise. And therefore, a Jewish bakery opens up, it doesn't matter. I've already done it. It's already okay. Why? The cheftza, isn't it still a pas of a guy? I don't care what it is. The din wasn't in the pas. The din was in me, and I already did my thing. I had a chiyuv at the point of purchase to do what I had to do. And that was it. That was my whole chiyuv. But there was nothing inherently wrong with the pas anyway. There was no din in the pas. That's why I thought maybe you could explain that rashba. And it's very mistaken that, you know, you could have said it even much, 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 much simpler. You could have just said a level of stringency, you know, that it's mamish, like unreasonable. A guy is going to start his meal, right? You sit down around, you know, much more balabatish, right? You sit around your table, you invite all your company, you bring all your bread out to the table, and all of that bread was perfectly kosher because you bought that bread from a non-Jewish bakery, but there was no Jewish bakery in town. You see, everyone starts to eat. In the middle of the meal, the grand opening happens of the bakery three blocks away. Shleimi's, Maishi's, I don't know, whatever. Those are the only two bakery names, I think, right? So Shleimi's, Maishi's Bakery. Maishi and Shleimi open a bakery two blocks away. Right in the middle of your meal. So you could just argue, come on, for a din de rabbanan, I'm going to say that now it's going to become asim. Namish in the middle of the meal? That looks like a joke. Yeah?
Could it be enough even if you know that he's going to open the next day? If you said that's like not
What if you know that that he's going to be open? So I saw a discussion about that actually in here, in Rabbi David Cohn's sefer. If you know he's going to be opening. Where is it? Let me find it. But yeah, that could be a, you know, let's even discuss a little bit further. What did the Seder Yaakov talk about? He said, okay, the Rashba was clear that if the Jewish bakery opens up after you bought the bread remains mut. What about the other kula? That you got the bread be'ir, besada rather. You got the bread besada, and now you go into the ear. So does the bread become asur? So according to the beer that I was giving, that point of purchase, that's your chiyuv. The chiyuv on the gavra is at your point of purchase, go through the mental exercise to check off whether you have whatever kulas you need, right? That was the whole thing, right? So there should be absolutely no chiluk whatsoever between the two kulas. Between whether you bought it at a point when there was no Jewish bakery or you bought it at a point where you were basada. They're both the same. I don't care what changes afterwards. It doesn't matter. It's kosher. But Seder Yaakov's not convinced. Seder Yaakov thinks that this idea that even after a Jewish store opens up, it's still going to remain mutter is only when you were utilizing the kula. When you were utilizing the kula of not having a Jewish store. But if you were utilizing the kula of buying a pasada, then when something changes, everything could change. Bringing it back into the city, everything could change. Why? What was the svara? You know what the svara that he tried to say there at the end? The distinction between the two kulas?
The bread just sitting on the table, it's like silly to say the bread's going back and forth. But if you're physically taking it.
Right. He seemed to be most concerned about, is it going to look like a joke? It's not this whole vard of gavra chevta, but is it going to look like a joke? Is it going to look like our religion is just like, you know, making things up on the fly, where there's no clear gedda? Like you're in the middle of eating a meal, and oh, now it became kosher. Oh, look, now it became not kosher. Like, and nothing happened to it. But if you have a clear gedda, oh, now I'm besada, now I'm be'ir. Right? Just like, you know, people have an attitude like on vacation, like, well, if halacha doesn't apply. Okay, someone told me they were walking on the boardwalk. Who told me this? So, I'm trying to remember who told me this. But someone told me, they were walking on one of my tummies, I think. I was walking on the boardwalk in Miami Beach on a Shabbos and saw a guy with the payas, the whole get up, and and his wife with the tichel, with the whole thing, walking the other direction. And they walked down the boardwalk a little while later. And mamish, on the beach, the guy in Speedos, the woman in bikini. Mamish. Same people. Because they're on vacation. They're not in Williamsburg. There's no Torah or God in Miami. I used to have a Rebbe in MTA who used to tell us, you know why it's so hot in Miami? Because it's closer to Gehenna. Okay. I'm not trying to promote Silas and the whole. They're very fine from Jews in South Florida. My sister lives in South Florida. It's a really wonderful community. I'm just saying, people have this attitude sometimes. So you know, be'ir and besada lahavdil. Be'ir and besada. You know, something's it could be mutter besada, but aser be'ir. That's a clear geder. It was besada. Now it's be'ir. So when there's a clear gedder, it's not going to look like a joke. It's not going to look... So it's a different... You know, when you make it less lumdish, you know, it's not about the chepta and the gavra and what your point of chiyuv is, but it's just about, we don't want religion to look ridiculous. So, you know, like, pikuach nefesh, not pikuach nefesh, that's easy. It's easy to tell the difference. Okay, the guy's dying. Do what he needs. That guy's not dying. Don't give him the cheeseburger, right? Very easy to distinguish in our minds. But he's sitting around a table, and there's, because 3 blocks away, Maishi and Shlomi opened up their bakery. All of a sudden, mamish, in the middle of the meal, you know, this bread became usher. Oh, now the Vav caught them with Chazash Melt and closed them down. Oh, look, now it became mutter again. Oh, come on. That's how the Sefer Yaakov reads it. But I thought our explanation was a little bit, I don't know, better? Can I say that?
Yeah.
Better.
Yeah. What if the Rebbe had the garden for it? Let's say it wasn't a piece of Mevela, but a piece of Shua. You have a Shua, not eat something. And then if you go, that person would go to the Rebbe.
A case of Shua? What do you mean? Why?
So it's a garden.
Right. So he takes a din in the Gavra, right? A Shvur in the Gavra, right? Yeah, and? Then the Shvur goes away? Or Pekuach Nefesh? No, I think Pekuach Nefesh is a different din anyway.
Right?
Pekuach Nefesh is totally separate.
Like a type of case.
What I'm trying to say, though, is that there are certainly sum drabanan even that could be a din in that make it a chefetz of machlos asuros. It's just the nature of how they were gozer, right? Like bishalakum. Is bishalakum a chefetz of machlos asuros? Yes, bishalakum is a chefetz of machlos asuros. That's why we pass. You know, so we'll see in machlos we shown him that bishalakum cooked in your kalim, traits of your kalim. If you have the non-Jewish housekeeper in the house and she's cooking things, so there's actually more reason to be makel b'dieved that the food is kosher than that the pot is kosher, ironically. Because we're going to see there are certain kulas b'beis shel Yisrael, this or that. Maybe b'dieved you can rely on certain kulas. But the pot, you want to use it again. That's called the chachila. It's not even b'dieved. Your next use is the chachila. So, but that's to trafe up a pot, it's got to be a cheft of macholos asuros. So I think it's just an important way of looking at a, at each gezeirah derabbanan. And I realize it's against the nesivos. You know, if you've come across at some point in your life the famous nesivos in Reish Lamed Aleph, where he says that every yisur d'oraisa is nisur cheftza, and every yisur derabbanan is nisur gavra. He doesn't say it exactly like that, by the way. What he says, the nesivos writes, the context of the nesivos is he talks about what if you buy food from somebody and it was supposed to be kosher and it turned out to be non-kosher food. Can you get your money back? Can you go back and say, Mekach Tolos, I want my money back? So Shulchan Aruch says, if it's a Nisidor Raisa that you got, you can always get your money back. If what he sold you was Nisidor Abanan, it depends. If you haven't yet eaten it, you can still get your money back. But if you've already eaten it, so you had lunch, right? So what's the guy say? I'm going to give you your money back. You ate lunch. Your stomach is full, you're fine. So the Nesivos says, well, I don't understand. If I ate it and it was Nisar D'oraisa, I'm also fine. Right? I also had lunch. So why if I ate it and it's Nisar D'rabbanan, I don't get my money back, but if I ate it already and it's Nisar D'oraisa, I do get my money back. So says the Nesivos, because an Isar D'rabbanan b'shogeg is no Isar at all. An Isar D'rabbanan b'shogeg is no Isar at all. An Isser D'oraisa B'shogeg is an Isser B'shogeg. So if you gave me something that's not kosher mid'oraisa and I ate it, I violated an Isser B'shogeg. You've got to compensate me for that. I gave you money for that. I don't want to give money for an Isser. But if I ate what's only Yasser mid'rabbanan B'shogeg, I did no Isser at all. So the way all the Acharonim in Chasal Azar and Rav Adi Yosef, everyone, the way all the Acharonim explain that in Nesivos is that every Yisr D'oraisa is an Yisr Cheftza. It is a Cheftza of Machalos Asuros. So whether I eat it B'mezit B'shogeg, whatever, it doesn't matter what my attitude is, what my thought process was, whatever. I was imbibing something that was awesome. But every Yisr D'rabbanan is not a din of the Cheftza. You know who gets to make a Cheftza inherently Asr? The one who is the creator of all Cheftzas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's it. No rabbi is authorized to tell you this becomes a cheftza shel iser. They can say, because of our authority over you, you are not allowed to eat that. So if you did it b'shogeg, so why is any iser drabbanan really aser? If no rabbi can make it aser, No rabbi can take my chicken soup and milk mixture and tell me that it's usher. What can they tell me? That I'm not allowed to eat it. So why do I have to not eat it? Because lo sasser, I can't rebel against the rabbis. I have an issue that I'm not allowed to veer from what they say. Okay, but if I'm not rebelling against the rabbis, I was totally shogeg. It was not an act of rebellion, and it was not a chavtza shalister, so then it's totally mutter. That's the Nesivus, where he tries to like paint like this total black and white, where the raisas are all chavtza, the rabbanans are all gabra. This is not that. You know, I'm suggesting differently. That even the rabbanan, sometimes they'll make something a chavtza of machalos asuros on a rabbanan level. Even midrabanan. But what I'm suggesting over here is when it comes to Pasakum, is that they didn't do that. They made a chiyuv on the gavra at the point of purchase to go through your mental exercise in order to make sure. You can't learn Pasakum without mentioning at least that there is a min akord in Shulchan Aruch not to eat paspalter, even though we're making paspalter the rest of the year, like the Ramah, not to eat paspalter during Aseres Yimei Tshuva. What if you're machmir the rest of the year? So some suggest, okay, so then follow the Ramah. Meaning, if you're machmir the rest of the year, like the Rashba, so go step up, right? What's the idea of Aseres Yimei Tshuva? So it could be that, you know, the whole reason paspalter doesn't apply is because the whole reason paspalter doesn't apply is because they undid the gzeira because Zayn Rav Tzibir Chol Lamed Ba. It was not Mispashik Rav Yisrael. But everyone is able to be Omid Ba for 10 days. It's no big deal. Now, the source of that is Yerushalmi. But the Yerushalmi mentions nothing about Pas. If you look in the Torah, he quotes Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi talks about eating Chulin B'Tahara. Says that during Aseres Yimei Tshuva, you should eat Chulin B'Tahara. So the Torah says, okay, well nowadays no one's eating Chulin B'Tahara anyway because no one is Tahar and we can't track it anymore. And it's not going to work. So we need to take our own Chumba. So what do we do? Pas. One more machmir about paspalter during Aseres Yimei Tshuva. But the Lashon of the Yerushalmi is the 7 days of Aseres Yimei Tshuva. The 7 days of Aseres Yimei Tshuva. Well, wait a second. Aseres means 10. You guys are editing a Hebrew sefer. You got Aseres means 10. There shouldn't be 7 days of Aseres Yimei Tshuva. There should be 10 days of Aseres Yimei Tshuva. Why 7 days of Aseres Yimei Tshuva? Yeah, these Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur don't count, so they only have, why don't they count? Aren't you not meaning, I would think, if I'm not eating paspalter during the whole day. So different Achronim understand it differently. Some suggest, and this is very Nogaya, because there Yimei Kodesh, of course you're not going to eat paspalter. If you wouldn't even eat during Yimei Chol, of course you're not going to eat paspalter, and Yimei Kodesh. And from there comes the minhag of Avraham. It says, from there comes a minhag. Familiar with this minhag? Not to eat paspalter on Shabbos. On Shabbos, you ever notice all your challahs are from Jewish bakeries? Or from homemade bakery? Right? Well, why are they all from Jewish bakeries? Why not just go to Costco, buy a loaf of Italian bread? Right? It would work. Totally, right? It would work for Lech HaMishnah. It's a whole loaf. It's a, right? Why not do that? Because you can't. Not can't, but there's a minhag. There's a minhag. This was, my old Talmud, David Bashefkin, writes a column in Mishpacha magazine of a top five or top ten column. And 1 week he did top five Shabbos party snacks. Marketed necessarily toward the Jewish community, but they're staples at a Shabbos party. So one of them is the Steldoro cookies with the chocolate in them. Right? That's a classic Shabbos party snack. When they almost went milchigs. They almost went milchigs once, and the Jewish community had threw a fit at the Steldoro company and no idea what just happened. So they right, we had Alan Dershowitz on the case. He's writing letters. So they backed out. They changed them. So in the following issue of Mishpacha magazine, Rabbi Natanel Wiederblank's Shir in YU wrote a letter to Mishpacha that it really shouldn't be a Shabbos party staple because paspalter. You shouldn't have such things at your Shabbos party. It's pas palter. If you assume that cookies and crackers and these kinds of things, it's a machlokas and tosfos mesachus beitzah are included in the and you're noheg that even on Shabbos, so it shouldn't be your Shabbos party. Okay, but where does it come from to be noheg even on Shabbos? Because that cash in the Yerushalmi. That the Yerushalmi calls 7 days of Aseret Yemei Teshuva. What's 7 days? There are 10 days of Aseret Yemei Teshuva. So this is the beginnings of the Machlokes. Now it should be noted that we assume that it applies to Pas HaBavli Kisanin as well, not just regular Pas, but probably not to things that don't have any Tzuras HaPas, which is, you know, we'd have to really get into Hilchos Brachos to discuss what that means. But probably not when it comes to. We were just talking about YU, right? I mean, Solomon Reed of Blank Shir and YU wrote the letter to Mishpat. Welcome, Rabbi Jonathan Cohen from Yeshiva University. I hope you have t-shirts.
Other stuff.
Okay. I already have my line for life from MTA. Okay, so. We'll stop there. Given that, we'll stop there. And Baz Hashem, tomorrow, Rav Yonasan Sachs, Sunday, visiting day, Monday, Rav Eliyachim Konigsberg, Tuesday, you'll see me again. Okay. I mean, you'll see me, but, yeah. All right. Have a great day, everybody.